Welcome to Bad Dad's Film Review. Each week we watch a movie we missed and a program our kids are watching, and then we talk about them. And then each week we usually spend a few sad minutes talking about the depraved things the creators of that media got up to whilst making the art we've enjoyed. We've had everything from our favourite educational TV star defecating naked on his friend while wearing a bicycle helmet to rapey A-listers, cannibal B-listers, and a potentially racist mouse. That seems to be the state of things, really. Whatever we pick, there's a Me Too or a history of problems, but someone who's yet to be Me Too'd and whose content is more idiotic than problematic is co-host Sidey. Hello and welcome.
Hello.
Yeah. Next up, he's more cheese than man now, twisted and briefful. It's the original Boba Fett himself. It's Peter.
Hello.
Yeah. And after that, we have Dan, who reached deep into his dad brain to bring us an excellent topic this week with this week's top five Golden Raspberry nominees or winners, in which we may conclude that it's all harmless fun or that we might think it's lazy, mean-spirited and critically irrelevant with a bought for membership who are subject to serious lapses in judgment and guilty of a nasty piling in type mentality that we could all probably move on from. Only time will tell what anyone's individual opinion might be. Yeah. This week's main feature is the Bob Odenkirk action thriller Nobody, brought to us from the mind of John Wick director Derek Kolstad. And we finish things up with a look back to the 1970s at Mr. Ben. What a show that it is this week. Finally, there's just me to introduce, your co-host Riggs, a sort of budget Badil, who just likes just about everything, which probably means that my opinion is almost certainly not to be trusted.
I saw you were trolling Badil on Twitter today.
Yeah, it's just the thing we like to do.
Fellow Jews.
Yeah. Doing it up.
Yeah. Nice.
You guys been up to much this week? You been watching anything?
I haven't watched a lot of film content, but what we did watch, and I had to forego Eurovision to watch this, was we streamed the Little Mix last ever concert on Saturday night.
Right. Yeah.
Tremendous.
Okay. I have a...
Why was it the
erection?
Last?
No, a friend who went to it.
Really?
Yeah, over in England, wasn't it? In London.
It was at the WO2, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They're giving up, are they?
They're on a hiatus for however long, but that probably means they'll break up.
Okay, right, gosh. Sorry, what a big moment this is then, sorry, obviously.
Yeah, huge fan, so it was sad.
They're the ones who do the very, very sexual lyrics marketed at sort of nine-year-olds, isn't
it? Yeah, so the crowd, so at the start of it, it's all like you tweet in and you're like, I'm so excited for the show, and it's all like little kids, and there's little kids at the thing. And then they like launch into some song, which is about wanking. And then there's another one, which is about like going down on your missus.
Yeah.
Another one that's about fucking. And
yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm into it.
Tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Mm. Did you watch anything, Pete?
Yeah, I've been staying at my mother's just because we had to move out, getting work, some work done in the house. And she has no like streaming services. So I've been watching good old fashioned Sky.
Right.
And like Sky, you know, catching bits of things on Sky Movies and so on. But before I moved in, I did watch a film that I'd never seen before that I'd heard was good, The Dead Poets Society. I'd never seen that.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
Yeah.
Oh, Captain, My Captain.
Yeah.
That's quite a moment, isn't it?
Robin Williams. Film.
It's about my favourite topic, which is poetry.
Mm.
Well,
buses.
It's better than fucking, what's it called, Patterson? It's better than that. There we go. What else did I watch? I did watch Eurovision.
Did you?
Yeah, I watched it. When I say start to finish, I fell asleep halfway through the...
First time
what?
Watching Eurovision?
No, God no. I've watched it almost... I watch it pretty much every year.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. I do actually enjoy it. It's kind of like...
Snide commentary.
I don't know what's it. It's kind of like the sort of thing that you shouldn't watch, but you enjoy, like my parents having sex or something like that.
Yeah, I don't mind watching them.
No.
It's like a little bit like, God, this is terrible. Bit like the Pentathlon, which I did watch quite a lot of this week as well.
That's the five disciplines in the Olympics, isn't it?
Yeah.
And also a Mike Myers thing on Netflix.
Yeah. I've not.
Have you completed that yet, Reed?
No, I've watched about four episodes, which I can't really work out why, but
I've stopped at two or three.
No,
I'm
four episodes in as well, I think.
Yeah. I don't know why.
You're still in the same place as I was after just
like,
two episodes.
This is absolutely appalling.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch another one.
I'll tell you why. Because the credits with Jeremy Irons are really good. I really enjoy the credit.
Like, give me season two.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Yeah. They don't make them like this anymore, except they do.
Yeah.
Do you watch anything special, Riggs?
Watched the conclusion of Ozark. A bit underwhelming, okay. I'd say, would be my take. I'm not going to spoiler it, but...
I'll probably never watch it, but now that you said it's shit.
I watched that.
It's not shit, but...
Nah. Yeah. I'm not going to get round to watch Ozark, I think, anytime soon. I think there's too many other like series that you could invest time into. I still haven't seen The Wire. I started to watch that. I know that eyes wide from Sidey there. I did watch Tommy, which was a documentary about Tommy Morrison.
Oh, right.
The boxer.
The boxer. Yeah, that's on Disney. Quite a sad story, you know. It was. He really had everything. I mean, he was, you know, unfortunately, you know.
He didn't.
Lost it all, yeah. He lost it all quite young, and it's quite a weird story because he got banned from boxing just before a fight when his blood test revealed that he was HIV positive, and then like I don't know, 10 years later, 12 years later, another boxing body said, "Oh, he's okay to fight." He denied that he'd actually got HIV anymore, and it was really weird. Like, you know, he married a new wife, she said that he didn't have it as well, and when he died, he just died from cardiac arrest or something, you know, septicemia, but it wasn't HIV. But obviously it's complications, that's the problem. But it was quite a weird one. I watched that. I've been watching Winning Time, the story of the LA Lakers. That's really good. I nearly watched this movie about clocks, but there was no time. I started listening to an audio book I lost, so it was The Wife, so I'll never hear the end of that. And that's pretty much me, really, this week. I didn't get to do much more than the homework.
We had a top five, didn't we, last week?
We did.
Which was movie one-liners pre or post-kill. I think, Pete, you might have a contribution.
Well, you sprung it upon me just before, but I think I listened to that episode and there was some Bond content.
Yeah.
Not enough love for the best Bond, Roger Moore. So he's got plenty.
You having that side?
Well, you know I'm not, Bond. But you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a rise out of you though. But like he's got loads of them, really, really good ones. And some that are just bizarre, but I think I quite like when he throws Teehee out of the window of the train in Live and Let Die. And what's her name? Hot Jane Seymour.
Yeah.
Says, "Oh, what have you been doing?" And he was like, "Just being disarming, my dear."
All right, nice. Is that your nomination?
Yeah, why not?
Nice, like it, good.
Did we get any from
any Bonds.
Beautiful listeners out there.
We covered them all off on the show last week.
And we had Mel's Corey Haim.
Haim.
Whom?
The golden raspberries.
Yeah. What an inspired topic this was.
Yeah, well, you know, it just came to me in the middle of our conversation.
How do you feel about this sort of concept of
the worst films? I think that if taken in the right context with a smile in a right way, then it's okay. You know, it's pointing a bit of fun on something. There's been lots of actors and directors that have been on and they've done little, you know, acceptance speeches, yeah, and they made fun of it themselves. And
Halle Berry went for Catwoman, didn't she? I remember that was the first one I was aware of.
And she took her Oscar with her as well.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I think it is worse point than they really are poking fun or pointing fun at people that maybe didn't deserve it. And
there's a few they've had to rescind for being particularly mean-spirited. So we can talk about that.
I think it probably started out as something that had its place where, you know, trying to quite a lot of like A-listers and stuff take themselves very seriously. And this was, you know, trying to remind people that like, you're just performing, you know, like an art form. You're
just reading out someone else's words.
Yeah. And trying to get people to, you know, laugh at themselves and laugh at things that performances that maybe were a bit shaky, maybe even sort of started to enhance the quality of how people did things. Cause it would be in the back of people's minds, "Oh, we don't want a Razzie." But now, all these years on, 40 years on plus?
1980, I
Dan's good with years.
Sorry, 500 years on. It just seems like you said, mean-spirited and almost like the jokes run its course and
Have you been on their website?
It's no. The worst part of like consensus, you know, opinion stuff. So, you know, they don't pile on to, they just go for the really obvious stuff. And they don't, like, Stallone has been nominated. What is their personal vendetta with Stallone?
He's got the record for most consecutive nominations, 15 years in a row.
Rocky IV was nominated. It was the brainchild of a guy called John J.B. Wilson. He was a copywriter and a publicist, and he basically just did this reverse Oscars.
Yeah. I don't particularly like the Oscars either, I have to say.
No.
It's kind of dangerous territory nowadays, though, as well, because it can all be spun back at you. Whereas if you poke fun in a film for some reason, if there is, I don't know, like, if there is a minority represented in the film or something, it could be spun back, oh, you don't like that because you're racist or a bigot or whatever
well,
it
I
is.
I contend that there is a minority, but because it's generally a lot of the movies that are nominated for Razzies are movies that are targeted at women. So there is a bit of a discrimination angle going on.
Well, have you got any
romantic comedies and
yeah, but like, there's a lot of action as well, like Stallone and Schwarzenegger and yeah. stuff. Like there's a lot of like daft. I mean that became, you know, people like Stallone, and I think Bruce Willis has been nominated a load of times as well.
He had his own award. There's a story about that.
Yeah, so we could talk about that first because he was nominated in 2021 eight times as actor
in 1 year,
yeah, because I think there was films from COVID and things that were delayed and stuff, so he had
there was a lot of movies. I watched a couple of them, like Cosmic Sin, and they were not great movies,
but then they rode back a little
bit. Rescinded it because then his diagnosis came out and they're like, oh, we're being horrible cunts, so we'll take that one back. They did the same because, let's start getting into it, because I was going to say, were there any that surprised you? So right out of the gate, the very first Razzies, Shelley Duvall was nominated Worst Actress for The Shining.
Yeah.
Stanley Kubrick was nominated Worst Director for The Shining. Yeah. What the fuck?
And Betsy Palmer in Friday the 13th as well. So that's what I mean. Serious lapses of,
well,
like,
you've had...
They don't know about films. That's the main thing that
Certainly when you look back and you see The Shining and Stanley Kubrick in there, you think, well, what kind of authority have they got in telling anyone what's a good film and a bad film? But looking at some of the Razzie directors, you've had Kubrick, Brian De Palma, you've had Rob Reiner.
Brian De Palma was for Scarface.
Yeah, Oliver, for Scarface. Yeah.
Also did Bonfire of the Vanities.
Yeah.
Had Guy Ritchie, Joel Schumacher, Seth MacFarlane, Darren Aronofsky for Mother.
Yeah, I know, Mother, and Jennifer Lawrence as well.
And Ron Howard. So the you're in good company should you get a call on the Razzies.
Another thing is there's so many criteria by which you can dislike a film. Like, sorry, for example, it could just be a person that's in the film, and the film could be a stellar 10 out of 10. But if that person is in the film for 30 seconds, the entire thing's getting written off.
Yeah.
And so Mother, for example, people will hate. So a lot of people will hate that film because of how graphic and troubling it is.
Yeah.
But that's part of the fucking brilliance
but
of it.
But how
as well.
Can you watch that and go, Jennifer Lawrence is specifically awful?
Yeah, it's not an awful film. It's a polarizing film, for sure. Yeah.
But her performance as well. Like, why call out her individual performance? Yeah. What about it? There's not. It's so. Yeah, it's very reductionist.
Like I said, they've run out of steam with it. So
anyway, but
did we have any listener nominations? Because
I think
we did. Breachy came in because if you follow any of the tweets that Breachy puts out, not just to us, but out there, she's a huge Adam Sandler fan.
Yeah, so he's been nominated. Well, it's not a record number of times, but he has had a few nominations.
He was nominated 11 times in 1 year. Mm. So not him necessarily. So he was nominated for a few actor roles, but also like his production companies and blah, blah, blah. So films that he was attached to broke the record for having 11 nominations in 1 year.
Wow. Yeah.
Most of his films are crap, though, right?
Well, but Happy Gilmore and stuff, like, even if you don't think it's funny, what, you know, it's...
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, I like it as well.
Sidey doesn't like it, I know that much, but...
I'm not a fan of all of his stuff, but then there are some... What's the one that was on Netflix? Gems. The murder mystery one, I quite enjoyed that. And
it was the Uncut Gems.
Okay, like, but that's different.
Well,
he got
they gave him a special Raspberry Redeemer Award for Uncut Gems. But I don't know. That's what I mean. It's critically irrelevant because it's just like it's just whatever the popular cultural critical consensus is, and they don't go for anything like edgy or
no. But it does get people speaking about film and what they liked and what they didn't. I've got one here then to start off our nominations. It's the...
Are we going to nominate films that we want to save from the Razzies then? Is that how we want to do it?
I hadn't done it that way. Actually, some of these films that I've got on my first list here are both Oscar nominated and Razzie.
Yeah, nominated. I've got a couple of those as well. That's interesting to talk about.
So one of them was the Jesus Workout film, the CrossFit one, Last Temptation of Christ. That's Marty Scorsese there, you know. Yeah. So he's getting a shout. He got an Oscar nomination for directing. He had William Dafoe and Harvey Keitel. I think it was... Harvey that got Weinstein. The Razzie, yeah, for for supporting actor. I only watched this film once, and they were disciples. I think Harvey Keitel was Judas, I think he played, and did it really badly. I just watched a clip back on YouTube, oh, really? And it's just mega acting in this film, which didn't need it. So that's my first one. Pete, over to you. You're prepared there. What have you got for it?
Yeah, so I this was difficult to just put down films and... like whether it's an actor, whether it's a film and so on. It's kind of, it's more of a general topic that we're talking about. If I'm going to, what I haven't really prepared for is what the criteria that was just thrust upon us, which is saving films from Razzies.
Maybe that's another topic we could do one time. There's a lot of mileage in this.
Yeah, there's some. I mean, like you mentioned before, like
surprising ones or just...
No, just like, for, I think it could be films that either... were very much worthy of the Razzie or the opposite.
Shocking
of that.
That it's been in
like
there.
You mentioned before, like Rocky IV is a film that I remember with fond because of the, it's the Dolph Lundgren one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like that. I think that's the first one that I was like aware of as it was happening, as opposed to like the other ones like before my time kind of thing. And then I went back and watched them, but that was like a strong film. Dolph Lundgren was like fucking terrifying, like this like automaton.
Yeah, Rocky stopped the Cold War.
Exactly right. Exactly.
They've had
right.
a hard on for Stallone because they did they won First Blood as well. You know
what? Yeah, what the Razzies have done though is given me a huge amount of ammunition to challenge Sidey on his prequels versus sequels stance, and the all of the sequels, Star Wars, obviously we're talking here. No Razzie win. Like no, they didn't win any Razzies as far as I know.
So we're saying it's corrupt.
So the prequels,
yeah.
They've got a whole fucking raft of them, like worse.
They're still
everything.
Better than the sequels, though.
Yeah,
they're
I was not, so I was going to try and
certainly
save.
Not according to the fine minds that nominate the.
I was
going to
try and save Phantom Menace because it's the best one of all of all the post Return of the Jedi films because it has Duel of the Fates, but it certainly has the best sequence out of all of them. That's why
In 99
Attack of the Clowns, I'm not saving it. Can go to hell.
It's fucking turd. Yeah. In 99. Ahmed Best, one worst supporting actor for his portrayal of Jar Jar Binks.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty racist.
That's an absolute fucking turkey. Jake Lloyd was also nominated for that, but he's a really irritating kid.
Everything's been fine.
There's no really irritating kids in the sequels. Like that, him alone is worth the prequels getting panned.
I'm saving it.
You're saving it? Okay. Well, Hayden Christensen?
It's going to be an Obi-Wan. That's that next week, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Have I made a nomination there?
Well, you're putting in...
I don't know. We're just mumbling around this subject now.
Well, I'm saying that the prequels deserved the Razzies.
Okay. Have you got anything to add to this conversation, film-wise, Reeks?
This conversation, yeah. I suppose.
What, this conversation this, about film. This,
I don't know. I had a few sort of, you know, baffling ones. Howard the Duck.
Yeah, what the fuck is that doing in there?
You know, Roadhouse.
That was one of the early ones. Yeah,
that.
I had Roadhouse down there as a movie that I thought, well, it's okay. You know, it certainly
wasn't. I think Swayze got two in one year. Roadhouse
or
something else.
It wasn't terrible. You know, it made you think. Yeah, really, that's the worst they had all year. That must have been a pretty strong
year. Committed performances from everybody involved. A strong story. You know, even stuff like Hudson Hawk. You know, these apparently notorious movies. Again, I just call them ambitious failures. This one, you know, have you ever seen this one?
Yeah, the cinema.
Bruce Willis. You know, it's got a heist movie. It's an action adventure. It's got a bit of like comedy. There's a bit of musical bits in it. Yeah. Willis is kind of charismatic in it. It's a good movie. It just doesn't deserve being called out or any of the involved. Yeah, anyway, I can stop crying about it. Blair Witch.
Blair Witch was another one that was really... And we talked about Waterworld in the midweek, and they've had it for Costner as well. The Postman was another one that got selected for a Razzie.
Costner features quite heavily in the nominations down the years, and I've said this before... Even in the Untouchables and stuff, I don't think he's a very fucking good actor.
Well, Postman didn't deliver, let's be honest.
But I don't like Kevin Costner as an actor. I don't.
I do.
Yeah, I quite like him.
He's quite clearly a guy, I know this sounds ridiculous, quite clearly a guy playing a part. There's no, I don't believe
you're not,
his.
You're not taken, swept away with the performance?
Not at all. Yeah. Never have been. Even the Untouchables is a fucking really strong film.
Like, is it probably a top 10 movie for me?
I think it's a fucking brilliant film. I'm not criticising the film at all. I think Kevin Costner is like...
The Untouchables they're talking about, Dan.
Yeah, he's...
You look baffled.
I am. That's the Untouchables with Stallone and all
that's
these...
That's Expendables,
thank fuck. You total penis.
Oh, thank fuck for that. I was just having a moment there where I thought you was thinking that film was good.
Costner, Connery, so, De Niro, yeah. Untouchables, Garcia. Al Capone, Elliot right, Ness, yeah, yeah, Bloody, no, that, Andy Garcia. Yeah, fucking brilliant film.
Yeah.
And Costner's like... surrounded by powerhouse performances and delivering like wooden, you can tell he's just reciting
lines.
He's
not wooden lines. In it. He's not wooden.
He's
in it, for God's sake.
I don't like Kevin Costner, and he deserves all the raspberries that can fit up his bottom.
Well, I want to save a film, and it won the Razzie for worst actor in 1984 for Peter O'Toole. Can you guess what it is?
1984 for Peter O'Toole. No, what is it?
Supergirl. So oh, I had. I had this on video and watched it about a trillion times, far more than I watched Superman. And it's fucking great. And it's the same story, sort of.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she is super hot. Super fucking hot.
Who is it?
I can't remember.
Well, Riggs hates Peter O'Toole and I know. The films he's been in. Yeah.
So much that he won't watch any content
with him. Refuses to watch Lawrence of
Arabia. I'm going to nominate Supergirl one day as a mid-week.
I'm in for that.
So I was surprised to see them because in my mind, that was a 10 out of 10 movie. And all the performances in it were perfect. So fuck the Razzies. Supergirl's staying out, in my opinion.
Well, I've talked about Supergirls. Annie was a film that I watched not so long ago with my daughter. You know, the sun will come out tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, that was a Razzie, you know. Did you know the letter F in orphan stands for family? But this was a really kind of... strong movie. Another surprise, you know, that it, I think it was Oscar nominated, maybe. I don't know. It was certainly, you know, a cult film, a big one. I'm just surprised that it was anywhere near the Razzies.
What I have delivered this evening, as well as cheese, is a couple of world records.
Oh, nice.
That are raspberry related.
Nice.
And one of these, if not both, definitely one of these.
We can do.
In fact, both of these we can do. The first one is K. Colton. I don't know what the K stands for, but let's...
Say that again.
K. Colton.
K. Colton. Letter K.
Oh, the name.
Colton, yeah.
Right, okay.
Holds the world record for the tallest tower of raspberries, which I'm thinking like, if you've got like...
Is it individual raspberries?
Is it a pitted? Would you call it a pitted raspberry? Like, you know,
Yeah.
This is doable. Because you remember eggs. You remember we had eggs and it was three,
Can
I think,
you use any kind of... pencils
No, God, no. This is standalone raspberries. Well, I'll put you out your misery. It's four. Like, you could just put one.
You are fucking kidding. Four raspberries?
Yeah, we could do that tonight. Have you got any raspberries?
I've got three in the fridge.
No world record for you, Dan.
Yeah.
No.
But another one, and this is definitely beatable. Benjamin Gross has the world record for the longest raspberry, as in...
Yeah.
Directed towards a camera non-stop. And it only lasted, his raspberry, for 59.06 seconds.
Well, that's quite long, I think.
No.
There's no chance.
There's no camera.
That. No.
A minute. People can hold their breath for, like, people must be able to expel breath for longer than a minute. And that's all you need to do.
Yeah, sure. But to make the raspberry noise,
I think you're bigging up Benjamin Gross too much here.
I think the four raspberries is the first one to go for.
I think this could be the Dunning-Kruger effect in motion here, to be honest. I reckon try it and see.
I reckon it's quite tough. I reckon that's a pretty strong record. I'm not saying it's unbeatable, but.
The fact that it's directed to camera, I don't know.
Yeah, that adds nothing, does it?
Yeah, but there's two of the records. Okay, all right. Okay, I'm going to save it. I'm going to save a film then. Con Air in 1997.
Ooh, Nick Cage
was given. They had special awards, and it was given the worst reckless disregard for human life and public property award. Which I guess it kind of deserved because they crashed a plane into Vegas and trashed absolutely everything. But Con Air itself was not a Razzie worthy film.
No.
I got a lot of pleasure out of that film.
It was Oscar nominated as well for the song.
Was it?
For the song. It was How Do I Live Without You?
Yeah.
Leanne Rhymes or something like that. Oscar nominated that one.
That may have been written for that film.
Yeah.
Bizarre. Anything to say on that?
I just hate that line of dialogue about putting the bunny back in the box.
Yeah, it's bollocks, but the rest of the
film... So therefore I can't watch it.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to save some people or roles, because nominating Danny DeVito for Batman Returns, just what? An absolute joke. So... Take it away.
Yeah.
So I'm taking it away with my power of nothing. All of the Stallone ones, First Blood, Rambo First Blood Part 2, Rocky 4, they're all going. Costner in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Have me think it's a good movie. He's not great in it, but it's a great... It's a great, enjoyable movie.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
No, I like that. It's... In spite of Costner.
So I'm
I think it's because of the American thing.
Yeah.
I'm just turning up and being American. But
I'm taking all that away. Really controversially, I'm taking away Lone Ranger as well, because I'll go to bat for that one, even though it features our favorite Cannibal Army Hammer. But that is, I think, superior to the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, but being in the same vein.
Okay. I'm going to save a couple of movies, one of which we mentioned already, which is Howard the Duck. In no fucking way should that be in there at all. And I'm also going to save Showgirls.
Yes.
Because it's like a film oddity of like weird performances and just like massive excess.
Elizabeth Shue.
Berkeley. And Kyle MacLachlan having like epileptic fit sex in the swimming pool, which I stand out.
And she makes him jizz in his trousers with a lap dance as well.
We've all been there.
And Verhoeven went to collect. He was the first person to go and collect a Razzie.
Oh, well, it's staying out for that reason then.
Well, Wall Street was also in there. And another one that was Oscar nominated, Michael Douglas, actually a winner for this. And this is the first one to win both an Razzie and an Oscar, and it won the Oscar, as say, for Michael Douglas. The Razzie was Daryl Hannah's performance, which was slated. But, you know, that's one of the more memorable films of the 80s, really, isn't it?
Greed is good.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They've got serious lapses in judgment, and it comes from the fact that the committee is like 750 individuals, but they pay to be a part of it.
Right.
There's apparently no requirement for you to have actually seen the movie. So, I mean,
it's almost like they could be a part of this podcast.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go around another lap and I can wrap through the last few of mine.
Is it my turn again?
Well, you can have a go, Pete.
Well, yeah, as I said, I didn't really sort of... So I've just put films that I thought were worth discussing. I mean, one that I'm not going to save, but I feel like because of this podcast and we all experience it at the same time, it's got a special place in my heart. Cats.
Mm.
I can't stop thinking about it. I still sing the Rum Tum Tugger to myself quite a lot. It is one of the best comedy movies I've seen in my life. And I know that's not what it was meant to be. I will watch it again, definitely.
I don't want
to save it.
I wouldn't.
Because it's bollocks. It's total bullshit. But I will definitely watch it again.
Oh, no.
Maybe just to relive the horror.
It was so hard to get through. It was so labored.
No. I won't save it. But a film that I thought... Okay, it's not a brilliant film, but it won the worst picture in 1993. And I don't remember it being really fucking bad. It was Indecent Proposal. Is that really bad?
No.
It's pretty mediocre.
And G.I. Jane got one as well. So maybe they had it in for Demi Moore.
Demi.
Yeah, that's another thing. They seem to have these...
Picking on people.
Yeah, personal... Yeah. Bullying. It's bullying, and you know I don't like that, except for when Howie's here.
Yeah, true. Oh, yeah, because you
and then
are
I
a
like
bully,
to
aren't
bully
you?
Howie.
Yeah.
He's the
Do
one
Do you think
person.
That they pick people that they think can take it in the spirit that it may be intended?
Like, no, I think...
I feel like Sylvester Stallone will just be like, fucking brilliant. Like, you know, I'm quite happy for you to, like, say it's shit, because he's got fucking, you know... loads of awards, and he's been involved in some brilliant films, and I don't see it bothering him or affecting him in any way, shape or form.
I certainly think if it's somebody starting out in their career, or a younger person who hasn't maybe won an Oscar already, or hasn't got that back catalogue they can fall back on and say, well, you know, I'm so... It's potentially a bit of a...
Why haven't they nominated... That's... Star Wars should have been nominated for a Razzie. There you go. All of the new ones could have been in there.
Well, and they weren't, and it just goes to show how wrong side he was. Do you want some more info on how wrong side he is about stuff? Nicolas Cage never won a Razzie, so you're wrong about that. Been nominated quite a few times. Kirsten Dunst and Meryl Streep have never even been nominated. And Meryl Streep's been nominated for 21 Oscars, by the way.
There's just no accounting for taste, Peach. I mean,
well, I think that this is... unequivocally proven that you're completely wrong about everything you've said.
But haven't we already agreed that collectively that this is a poor barometer for
Not when it helps my argument.
Yeah, there were other movies. I mean, Friday the 13th, we talked about. After Earth was the Will Smith one, the sort of, I guess, a kind of vanity project, but it was made, you know, it wasn't that bad that he did with his son. There was Battlefield Earth. The scriptwriter said, he said, no one sets out to make a train wreck. Comparing it to a train wreck isn't really fair to train wrecks because people actually want to watch them. So he, I guess, knew that it was pretty awful and that that did deserve its accolade. But I think it's done. It's run its course now, really. It's a bit, you know, you like to hear people talk about something on a spectrum, I think, rather than just
we nominated Cats, didn't we, because we were going to give it a kicking and it just turned out to be not very much fun to watch and not very much fun to talk about.
It was fun to
celebrate something that's good, or at least try and find the good in something rather than just just boring and miserable.
It's one of our most popular episodes as well.
I know, because people like, you know, just try and, but when you sit and watch it, it's like, it's
the experience
shit.
Of doing it.
The joke is over.
The joke was on us, really.
5 minutes.
The joke was on me more than it was on you, because I missed it. And then you got on at me and said, well, you're not going to watch it. You're not going to watch it. So I watched it alone. Yeah. Didn't even get to talk about it. Just say, oh, yeah, you were right. That was shit.
But in 1986, Kim Basinger won for 9.5 weeks.
Nice.
That's a good movie. And Pete, one that you probably remember quite fondly from 1999, Robin Williams for Bicentennial Man.
Oh, it's awful. It's so, they've got that absolutely spot on. That was fucking dreadful.
Mm. Well, I've also got a friend of mine mentioned this film to me ages and ages ago, and then I saw it on the Razzie list there. It's Freddy Got Fingered.
Mm.
You ever seen that Tom Green?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a comedy where he basically accounting his own life and getting into a, you know, a hit TV show or something. But he talks about his dad sexually abusing his brother or something. And
is that the fingering part?
Yeah, that's the fingering part. And then it
so lulls right out of the gate.
Well, lulls right out of the gate. And it got slated, you know, right at the time. But now it seems to have found this kind of cult following. And I watched it. And there were a few funny kind of lines because he's a funny guy. They don't all hit. But he does have some funny lines and he has some funny kind of bits and pieces. So that was one.
No, you're cringing. Oh, you're cringing.
Well, I'm just like, was he funny?
No, he's not.
No, well, you can enjoy a movie like that for 90 minutes.
He had a few funny lines in it. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't go in, but Armageddon, that's Michael Bay movie again.
All the Transformer movies were nominated.
Yeah, but
I've never seen any of them.
Even I wouldn't put, I don't like Michael Bay or that movie that much, but I wouldn't put it, give it a...
it's one of my kind of guilty...
Don't feel guilty
pleasures.
About it. Just like it.
I really do. My sister and I, we watched that far too much together. It got an Oscar for sound and visual, or it got nominated anyway. But the Razzie for Worst Picture, Director, Actor, and all the rest of it, they're all in the conversation for that as well. Pearl Necklace Harbor, sorry, another Michael Bay one that was pretty rubbish. But again, another Oscar nominated, sound and visual, you know. So... It goes to show the real flip sides of these films.
Yeah.
Only two things I haven't crossed off my list that are just interestingly, and I never, ever, ever think of her as an actress, and clearly she's not a very good one. Madonna has had 16 nominations.
She's winning the chick nomination vote, I believe, for the ladies.
Yeah, 16 nominations, 9 wins, including Worst Actress of the 90s. She got a full decade's worth of hate there. And the only other film I've written down here that I didn't think was bad, but we've never spoken about, The Emoji Movie. Anyone seen that?
No.
I mean, it's got James Corden in it, and he's a racist West Ham fan like you, Dan, but we...
No, I've not plumbed those depths yet.
I've watched it with the kids and we enjoyed it, but I didn't think of it as being god-awful necessarily, but...
Somebody did. Will Smith's been nominated a few times, and I was looking. He was razzied for After Earth.
Was he?
Which was one...
Interesting.
After Earth. Let's talk about that one.
But he also went in and was... rescinded for concussion, which I just thought was great for Will Smith at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Been in a film like that.
I've only got a couple left to talk about. One was Arnold Schwarzenegger for End of Days, and I really like that film.
And The Sixth Day he was
Can fuck off.
Yeah.
And then Ben Stiller for Dodgeball.
Wow.
The fuck is going
They're
on?
They're really off the mark some places.
For me,
it's
like the final nail in the Razzie's coffin. That's fuck them.
Picture of me taking the bull by the horns.
But it actually happened.
Yeah, it's a metaphor.
All right, well, come on, let's get on with it. Save, what are we doing? Say, can we save people or
whatever you want,
movies or just anything?
Yeah, so whatever you want. Just do whatever you want.
I'm going to go with Armageddon.
Right, Armageddon is saved from the Golden
Gloves. Saving Armageddon.
I'm saving just because it's a personal fave.
I'm going to save Con Air then.
All right.
Well, why not?
Side?
I mean, I feel like The Shining shouldn't be in there, but that's got enough kudos to save itself, really.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep Howard the Duck out of the Razzies.
Nice. And I'm gonna have to take Friday the 13th out. It's the template for slasher movies.
Pete, there was some discussion on the WhatsApp group that there might not be cheese available tonight, but you came through.
Well, I think we could turn this story into a film in itself. So
it's like a Kevin Costner film.
16th of May that it is today. Mm. 16th is when my standing order goes to the cheese people,
yeah.
And that's when I can pick it up. I felt like the cheese place was closed on a Monday, though, and I thought that we were going to miss the cheese boat.
This is the part in the film where everybody feels really bad and everyone's like, despair. What are we going to do? There is no hope.
There's a twist, because I met Sidey in town today and we actually went in person to the cheese shop together.
So, almost like Sam and Frodo.
Who's playing?
It was a bit like that.
Who's playing us in the film? I'm thinking like Chris Hemsworth. And,
yeah, okay. And
his less attractive younger brother.
Yeah, anyway, it was open and we took the delivery of the cheese.
Wow. Must have been just joyful scenes in the cheese shop.
There were, yeah. There was
when you first kind of walked, where is it? Is it in the market?
Well, it's moved down, you see. So, plot twist, it's not opposite Hugo's anymore.
Right. Oh.
It's now actually in the market.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so because of that, I think they feel compelled to be open on a Monday.
It's like
now.
Mordor, then. You have to go through, you have to get into the castle.
Yeah, it's next to the women's public toilet.
Wow. That's exactly where it is.
So the cheese smell is not just from...
How lovely.
Nice. They've really secured it.
So we took delivery of some cheeses that I'll just very briefly talk you through and make up some stuff about, because I've left the notes about them at home somehow. But one of them is an exclusive, a Bad Dad's First here. It is a Italian carboncino.
Which is
the one that we've been pairing with the Rivita Thins, the salty rosemary fellas. Yeah.
Okay.
The kind of like blacky kind of rind or whatever. And it is an Italian mixed cheese. And it is a mixture of cow, sheep and goat's cheese.
All at once.
Milk cheese, yeah.
A blend.
It's a blend. And I think that they've got the blend just right.
Yeah, it's decent. I wouldn't like that.
Yeah, it's got a lovely texture. And the Rivita Thins are banging. There's also a Langres French cow's milk cheese, which is, it just describes it as, under cheese type, it just describes it as stinky.
I wouldn't say it was that stinky.
It's not that stinky. I've had more powerful cheeses.
All of us
here
could get on with that cheese, I'd say.
That's good as well. And then there's like a cheddar. I've not even looked. We've not touched the cheddar yet, but...
Cheddar's pretty boring.
It is an English farmhouse cheddar that is mature, full-flavoured, the creamy texture and a fruity tang. And it's handmade in Dorset.
It's wax coated.
Yeah, it's in a sort of a burgundy
Ron Burgundy
wheel, wax wheel.
They're the same people who do the Black Bomber.
Yes, they are. I think
it would be good then.
Yeah, the Fine Cheese Company. So, high hopes for that.
Yeah,
and we also picked up some pickled chilies while we were there. Impulse buy.
We did, and they were very good. Yeah. Massive chilies. I've never seen these are the biggest chilies I've ever seen in my life. Lengthwise.
Tapeworm.
Yeah, I didn't know who was going to eat who at one point.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's good. And that also segues very neatly into this week's film nomination, Dan, which was your choice.
Yeah, well, it was a bit of a team effort, wasn't it? I'd seen this and you probably talked me into choosing it more than I chose it, because I wasn't kind of sure about it.
Well, because I hadn't seen it and I wanted to see it. So yeah. I pulled for it quite hard. Yeah, yeah,
I hadn't seen it and I wasn't really bothered about seeing it, to be honest. I'd have missed this, I think, if it hadn't have been for our discussion and going, right, okay, let's add it in. And so in the theme of Taken and any other of those films where you got 50-year-old plus blokes trying to be action heroes, we join nobody, and it starts out, and you've got Bob Odenkirk, who's Better Call Saul. Welsh was he in?
Well, Breaking Bad originally.
The lawyer in that.
So long American listeners will know him from Saturday Night Live. He was on that.
Snell.
Right, okay. I must say, he's for an older guy, he's an actor that I've only just kind of become aware of. You know, I didn't see any of his younger, earlier acting stuff. But he's got one of those faces that I like looking at. He's just
a pretty charismatic dude.
Yeah.
I'd never seen him before Breaking Bad.
Same.
And I really enjoyed him in Breaking Bad, but I'd never thought Better Call Saul, like a spin-off, like of all the characters in that to spin off. At first I kind of like resisted watching it because I thought it's not gonna be as good as Breaking Bad. But Better Call Saul is fucking brilliant. I don't know has anyone seen it?
I haven't seen any of the new stuff, but I'm up to date, up to the new stuff. And is there new stuff
like now or like imminent? Yeah. I think it's 5 seasons have been done and dusted. And yeah, there was a final
new season just released and I'm waiting until I cannot wait
for that because it's fucking, I think it, not consistently, but it hits some of the heights that Breaking Bad hit.
Well, my boy watched them all. I've yet to catch up with any of them, but I'd seen some of them and it was enough for me to go, I'm not watching this now, I'm gonna watch this
definitely from, make some time but that, this beginning. Isn't that
no so you know we've
we well, get
let's
like
talk,
a,
let's talk about the film before we give the thoughts then. So how did it start, Riggs?
Well, you get Hutch in the interrogation room, just close up of his face all battered and bruised, and you've got Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood by Nina Simone playing.
Yeah.
And he pulls open his jacket and he's got a kitten in it and a tin of tuna.
Yeah. It's an interesting intro to, because straight away you're like, how the fuck did he end up here? But
and the interrogator says to him, who the fuck are you? And he says, me, I'm, and then it slam cuts to the title, Nobody. So
it does a kind of Edgar Wright quick edit of the working week, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and it's like clearly just some really hideous mundane routine of, you know, work.
Yeah.
Loveless. Suburban looks life. Like a loveless marriage, forgetting to put the bin out every week.
And every Tuesday, then.
And it just speeds through that, you know,
Monday,
relentlessly.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah, that was it. And it gives you a sense of.
But you have just seen him. So you're expecting something to.
He looks like, what is he, like a bookkeeper in a factory
he's,
or something?
Yeah, he's doing some sort of financy work in a manufacturing
environment. There's even like cool little bits where as he walks in one day, there's all the like employee of the month and everyone's in overalls. And then there's like 1 month and it's blurred out. But you can tell it's him in like wearing kind of like more, you know, office attire.
Slacks and a shirt. Yeah.
And even that in itself is like, oh, eventually, because he's quite a long way along the Hall of Fame. So eventually, like, it seems like, we've got to give it to him at some point.
So that's it. It begins at the end and then it kind of cuts to how we get there. And it starts telling the story and building the character of Hutch, who's just this guy who's going to work, you say, missing the bins every day. And the wife is the only time she seems to talk to him and says, miss the bins again through their week.
We see a shot of their bed and they've got like a divide of pillows just separating them, which I thought was
odd.
That was Bob Odenkirk's great idea.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. And so it's this mundane life, deeply unfulfilling. We can see that already.
It's Connie Nielsen of, I want to say Gladiator. Is she Gladiator?
Is she?
She's been in.
Isn't she the lady from?
No, I can't remember what she's in.
Oh my god! What's the football one? Manager one?
Ron? No. Ron Manager? No.
No. The one? Ted Lasso.
Oh,
is she in that?
No, she's not Gladiator. Devil's Advocate.
I thought she might have been the Shame Woman from Game of Thrones, but I don't think it is.
No.
She's playing Bob Odenkirk's wife.
Yeah. He's doing some pull-ups at the bus stop every day, and her advert for her real estate business is there staring him in the face in this sort of weird.
It's kind of suggesting she's the breadwinner.
He's got some sort of dead end, going nowhere routine.
And he's briefly alluded to having a military history when his son is doing a project and needs to, and you can see
on veterans.
He's doing a project on veterans and you can see that he doesn't really want to interview his dad. He's not much of a figure to him. He's reluctantly doing this project. Yeah. So it builds up this picture.
And even dad's kind of saying, well, maybe you should ask your uncle or whatever. But then one thing happens. One night there's a noise, and in the middle of the night, he's woken. He goes downstairs and some intruders are in the house.
Well, I think he has some sort of insomnia because he keeps getting up, I think. Anyway, he's up and he sees some intruders.
Yeah. And they're robbing the house, and he's got a golf club in his hand, and he's
not the crime of the century, this one.
No, it's a couple of, it looks like, you know, just desperate kids or something, chances or whatever, but they do have a gun with them, as we find out, and they end up pointing it at his son, who's taken down one of the assailants or the robbers. He's taken him down. The other one's pointing a gun at him.
He's already confronted them and said, just take what you want. I don't want any trouble. Just take what you want and then go.
But it's turned out that Hutch is actually has the opportunity to wrap the golf club around the head.
I think he's taken a 3-wood.
Yeah.
You want a driver.
It's a poor choice.
Yeah, I'd have taken a 7-iron myself, because you can really...
Well, I think you want the length.
Possibly.
But he does back down when he has the drop on the robber, and his son sees it as well, and he gives it up.
Oh, he just really pussies out. I mean, he just goes out.
Or so it seems.
He doesn't pussy out anyway.
That's what it seems to his son. His son's there going, Dad, what are you doing? We had him. I've just jumped off this fucking staircase, taken down one of these guys. You can hit the other one around the head with a thing, and we've got these robbers.
I know what you're saying. That's probably the right choice is to say, fucking go.
So I was thinking this at the time. It's like, because then in the subsequent scenes,
the policeman like has a go at
him. The next like sort of 5 minutes of the film is basically like deriding him for not
have a go here. Right?
Yeah. Right. And
one thing
I did want to sort of like mention is like, is that a cultural thing? Like, obviously a lot of, as we know, people in America have guns, and it's all about kind of like, you know, protecting yourself in your home and stuff. And so is the expectation in America that if like burglars come into your house, like you should fucking fight them and like engage them.
Well, if you had a gun, you'd be fine just to shoot them.
Insane. If you're ever in that scenario, the advice clearly is like, it's not whatever it is that they're going to steal is not worth your life or the life of your son or whatever it is.
And it's pretty much shown that these two are like a bungling fucking idiots that they just break in. It's an opportunist thing that they managed to get in by leaving a pizza box at the garage door. And, you know, imagine how fucking imagine I would be fucking paralyzed with fear if someone was in my gaff in the middle of the fucking night. I wouldn't be thinking, oh, I'm going to take these guys
with a gun.
I'd be fucking shitting myself. Yeah.
I thought at first that he didn't, because it was evident that it was a girl.
Yeah.
Was the one that he was like creeping up on. So I thought at first he felt a bit conflicted about like leathering a girl around the back of the head with a golf club.
Because he's winding up, and then he kind of looks, he hears the voice of the girl, and he winds it back down. His son sees that, thinks, Dad, you're pussying out here. But he goes, look, just take what you want, take one. And he explains, I just didn't want to make it worse. Didn't want to
It's the reactions of everybody else afterwards as well that compound it, because the police officer vaguely implies, or not even vaguely.
Especially if that was my family.
Everybody conspires to emasculate him basically, including his brother-in-law at work, who's like a pseudo tough guy, and gives him a gun.
To look after his sister,
and he puts it in the freezer. I wonder if that'll ever be used again. So it's, you know, you've got this sort of portrait of mundanity in this incident that's happened to make him feel bad.
And the trigger point comes when
then we find out a little bit more though, don't we? Because he goes down to the basement and he gets on, somebody starts radioing him.
Yeah, I was going to say about his next door neighbour in his car. Oh, yeah. Because it's like the polar opposite. Even his house looks more like modern and fancier. Yeah. And he's got, what was it, a Dodge Challenger, like a 1970s or something. Yeah, real American muscle 4. Car 9 thing.
4.9 litre V8.
And 0 to 60, I'm about to find the fuck out. Yeah. This guy's a fucking dick. Yeah. But he's, you know, he's all exciting and wow, whereas he's all mundane and fucking blah. But yeah, then something is slightly different about him. You know, there's something we don't quite know.
You're waiting still at this stage. I have not got an inkling, really, of the kind of film that it's going to turn out to be, because I went in, other than just the title, I didn't know much about
this. You wonder if
this
is going to be like a falling down type thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. what I thought. Because all I knew about the film, I'd heard, but not in great detail, about a fight on the bus. That's all I knew that it was fun. I didn't know that, you know, because what transpires is that he's a fucking hitman, right?
Yeah.
But I, like, exactly like you just said, Riggs, I was thinking this is Michael Douglas, when he's just going to, like, right, if something's going to snap in him and he's just going to go
quite
out.
Quite realistic. The way that
vigilante sort of killings or whatever.
The way that it was all done, and even the reaction of him with the robbers in the house and things, it's all quite realistic. As you say, you'd absolutely think, well, that's kind of how it would go. And as we'll talk about later on, the fight scenes as well.
Well, yeah.
They're certainly, until you get to the end anyway, they're not ridiculously kind of crazy. You know, there's a lot going on.
We can try and describe him because it's kind of fun. Well,
so straight after this and like, because I was actually feeling angry at, like, everyone being a dick to him that he's not fucking, you know, defended his family and shit. But then, like, not long after that, there's a scene where he's got, like, a hidden radio in his office, and it's his brother, isn't it? And he starts, and then it kind of all starts falling a little bit more into place, where he explains the sorts of things that, you know, your average layman would not fucking know. And then he's like, oh, I could tell that they were amateurs. I could tell they were scared. I saw that the gun wasn't loaded.
Yeah, and you get a shot of it, him looking the barrel and seeing that the chambers are empty.
Yeah.
You start to realise this guy is a highly trained operative who's just pretty much kick-ass.
It alludes to him knowing a lot more than he's letting on. It doesn't. You don't know the fullness
of... I knew, Pete.
You can pick him a mile
off. He was a kindred spirit, Dan.
Yeah.
And the voice he's talking to is the RZA.
In the credits, it popped up RZA, and I was like, oh, fucking cool, love RZA, that's great. Completely forgot, right? So at the end, when I was like, oh, fuck, of course, what a dickhead.
Yeah, but that's another example. Who the fuck was it? Method Man in Patterson?
Yeah,
like
Method Man in The Wire as well.
Yeah, there's some, like, odd placement of, like, Wu-Tang guys.
Yeah,
what pushes him over the edge is his daughter, who is the only one who shows him any affection, his youngest daughter, and she's lost her kitty bracelet, and that's the thing that pushes him over the edge. So he goes to see his father, who turns out to be Christopher Lloyd, which is cool.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And he starts rummaging in his, and he takes his jacket and his old expired FBI license, and he goes around town looking for stuff, different tattoo parlors, because he's seen a tattoo that she had on her wrist, I think.
So he's trying to identify which tattooist gave that tattoo and locate the robbers to get the kitty cat.
And we get one of the brilliant scenes in this, where he eventually tracks down to one of the tattoo parlors, and it's filled with military veterans, and they spy his expired ID straight away, and they're not taken by him. They know he's a fraud, sort of thing. And then as he moves to show them a document, he sees the tattoo on his wrist, which is a seven of spades and a two of diamonds, isn't it?
It's the worst hand you can have. Yeah.
And immediately the one guy just it's like in The Simpsons. Yeah. He just fucks off behind
thank
the
you
door
for your
like
service.
Thank you for your service. Shuts
like
the door.
15 locks that he's like doing, and then like a little like peephole that he looks through and then closes.
It's a brilliant
scene. And that kind of sharpens the wits of the other guys, who go, I've got this much money, then you go, I'd like to see one of you fuckers try and take it from me. Mm. I want to know who this is. So he gets the information, gets up to the apartment where these kids have been staying. And they're a lovely couple, it seems, on the outside, isn't it? There's a girl and a boy. They're in love with each other.
Yeah.
And they probably haven't got very much. They're not living in luxury or anything. And they're feeding each other food while he comes in, and just you start to see another side of him.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He's
But he looks like he's going to rough them up or even kill them or whatever. But then he goes into a room and there's a baby there. Was the baby ill? Like, looked like there was tubes.
It had an oxygen mask, right? On, yeah. Didn't it? So they're
desperate people.
Yeah.
You know, and this is, so he's outside, he's angry, and he's punching a wall when he gets on a bus. And this is where fate kind of takes a turn, because otherwise he's just going home. But some mad fucking youths have crashed this square block Jeep into some bollards.
It's quite surprising, because he's
right
just sat
outside the bus stop.
You know, the back seat of the bus, the middle one looking down the aisle. There's a young girl just to his left. And then you get the shot outside the bus of this fucking Jeep just pile, you know, those bollards, they're like, are they full of water?
Yeah.
Are they just sand fucking water, steam straight through there, clearly fucking off their head? Yeah. And they get on the bus. And
he's sitting there, and it cuts to his narration, and he says, please God, let them, please God, open that door.
Yeah.
And just right there with him.
There's one other guy in there. He's a big unit that he's already walked
a book
past. And yeah, he's a big guy who's obviously a weightlifter or something. So there's a couple of people on the
they
bus.
They slam his book to the floor. That, for me, their fate was sealed at that moment.
Yeah, and he says, I hope to God they like hospital food.
Yeah.
and still at this stage, you don't really understand, because he's 150-ish medium build guy, and these, you know, 6 or 7 rough looking.
Yeah, well, one of them is Daniel Bernhardt, who is Agent Johnson in the Matrix movies, and was also in a lot of other movies that I like, as a stuntman, Birds of Prey, other ones. And another one is Alain Moussy, who was the guy who fought Captain America in the Marvel movies.
Yes, they got they got good pedigree.
No, he was the one who fought him on the boat. He was character, I can't remember. Balrog, I think, is the character. So, yeah, really good top of their game stuntmen, so you know something's going
to happen. So he basically walks past them to the front of the bus.
Well, there's the phone, isn't there?
Yeah. And it basically takes the phone off the bus driver.
Gets her
escorts
off.
Her off the bus, shuts the doors, and then kind of just turns around and stands there. And then eventually they...
Well,
because
there's
of them
also a
up.
Girl that they're vaguely implying a sexual assault.
Well,
one
of them says, buy yourself late at night on a bus, like you're asking for trouble kind of thing. But then whilst their focus is on her... One of them kind of looks up and was like, oh, have a look at this guy, because he's just kind of like stood there.
Yeah, waiting for it to
eyeballing them. Yeah. And it's like, do you want some?
They've already stared down the big bodybuilder guy who's not fancied. He's got off the bus. So everybody's off the bus. And yeah, I mean, they're implying that.
Wait, he stares at him. He says, what are you still doing here, old man? And he takes the gun out and he empties the bullets on the floor. And then he looks at the guy in the yellow t-shirt, because the delivery is brilliant. He says, I'm going to fuck you up. And then it starts. And
what's good about this scene as well is that I don't know how long is meant to have passed since he was a double dangerous bastard.
Yeah.
But it doesn't start with him just being what I thought was going to be, which is like he just fucking folds them all in half and everything.
Fallible.
He's rusty as fuck. Yeah. And he's getting like punched and stabbed and hurt and everything. But you can see the way he moves and everything, that he knows roughly what he's doing. And it all starts coming back as his juices get flowing again.
Yeah. Well, no, he's totally imperfect as a fighter. I mean, he's getting hit, but he's just taking it and he's getting back up. Oh,
he took a stabbing like a champ.
Well, he took a stabbing. He took, you know, big punches, but he is giving as hard as he gets and harder. And there's, you know, then they're all piling in. The girl is kind of, has she got out now?
No, she's
still sat back in the bus, isn't she? While he's just taking one by one, they're all getting into a bad
show. Because at one point he goes out, he gets thrown out the window and gives the phone back to the driver, and then gets back on the bus and it all goes off again.
And not just that bit though, the fight itself has an internal rhythm where the participants, like, they get hurt and they stop and people are breathing for a minute and then, like, just you can hear cries of pain and like, and then they gather themselves to start again.
He kind of wraps like a seatbelt around himself.
He improvises a little noose out of something. Yeah. You know, there's out the bus stop thing, there's a little gag with like stop requested. And eventually it's just down to he smashes out Agent Johnson's teeth.
And he's like, oh, is my teeth, bad? Is it bad? And like, it's pretty bad.
oh, fuck.
And then it's just the yellow guy. And the yellow guy has the idea to grab the gun and he starts to load the bullets and he's like fumbling with the bullets and Hutch much just kind of really coolly, very slowly turns around, grabs this metal pole and just kind of slashes
just
his
rips
neck.
The metal well, pole
I think
off.
He like crushes his windpipe. He fucks him straight across the throat and his windpipe's crushed. Which and then he performs a tracheotomy.
Tracheotomy? Using like a straw for a milkshake.
Yeah, like cuts his neck, sticks a straw.
Which we know to be an ineffective technique because we talked about that when we talked about pens.
We did, but it was successful in this movie, however. And eventually, you know, the fight, he's victorious but bloodied pretty badly. And he just gets off the bus and says, sorry about the mess.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great scene because he is not perfect. Yeah. You know,
he does chaperone the girl off the bus as well. So,
well, he's said in his mind, as we hear, this girl's going to get home safely.
Yeah.
You know, and he's made up his mind there before those guys have started a fight with him. That's what's going to happen here. And that's what he gets to do. So when he goes home, the wife doesn't seem to be that surprised when she sees him.
No, it becomes clear that she's aware of his former life and his understanding of the scenario.
The pillows get taken away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a conversation where he's reaching out and he says, I miss you. Do you remember who we used to be? And you sort of, you know, every couple probably has a kind of conversation like that at some point, but it's relatable. It feels effective.
I was thinking it was more of, was she in on it? You know, was she part of the fighters or something? Do you remember what we were like? That's how I read it, but you're probably...
It's right in both ways, you know. It's thematically there.
Have we mentioned that one of the guys was connected on the?
We haven't mentioned it because the guy, the Russian.
Well,
guy,
we don't know that yet.
Goes to some sort of weird karaoke.
Well, straight after the scene that Dan's talking about, it flashes up the title card Julian, and you know you're going to get something, and you get this great scene. This Range Rover, I think it is, crashes outside, and he just walks straight across the street, and all the cars have to stop for him. Yeah. And he's like straight on. He's just a prick straight away.
Yeah.
Straight up on stage, like that Bingo Hell movie.
Yeah, he just does a little bit of coke, doesn't he, before gets up. Yeah. And then he starts dancing really weirdly and badly and joins in the
sing song that's going on the stage. Yeah.
And we find out he is actually some well-connected... Yeah. Psychotic.
Is it there or a later scene where he like brutally murders someone with
there.
Like
guy looks at him wrong. That's the first scene. It's just straight off the stage. He goes upstairs and he's speaking to three guys who have just given him like millions to hold in his club. And he's like, yeah, it's safe. Don't worry about it. And then to prove it, he glasses this guy.
Yeah, I didn't follow his logic there.
No.
But it was a display of power.
Like, what the fuck are you going to do?
And then they even said, do you know who that was? He's like, he's got a stake in that or whatever. And it's like, we can all share it now.
Yeah. Yay, everyone loved that because they were
So it turns out Yellow T-Shirt Boy was this dickhead's brother.
Yeah.
And he's been brain damaged. And despite, you know, Julian's double standards, like, you know,
not actually liking his brother. It's an embarrassment.
Well, and killing a guy in the previous scene as well. But he didn't like his brother. But so he goes off to find out who did this. Yeah. And he goes off to interrogate poor Agent Johnson first. He walks in the room and throws a chair at him. And hits him straight in the face.
It really did. It was, and he's already in bad shape. He's already lost all his teeth and bruised and battered. And he finds out, it was just one guy. He can't believe it. And so he goes, right, well, go and find me this guy. Mm. And they've got his bus ticket. That's the one kind of connection. And it goes back into the scenes of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Well, he's Thursday, a new Friday man now, again. Though, Hutch.
But he's cooking. He's reborn. He just needed to get that out of his system. He had a big blast. He had a fight. End of it for him. But they all turn up. They found out where he lives and... They'll turn up at his house.
He's got a basement.
We did miss a scene there. I only bring it out because he goes to see the barber who tells him who he's dealing with, Julian. He gives him the file on Julian. And we know that now that he's connected. And the barber was a guy that I've seen in absolutely everything. He was in Bond and all sorts of stuff, but I never knew his name until I looked it up today because it's Colin Salmon.
Yes.
Did you know that name? Because I figure that's a name that I would know.
The black fella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Colin Salmon is that guy's name.
Slamming Salmon.
No, don't they?
Thank God, no.
He knows what he's coming, but, you know, clearly, you know, Hutch is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, we're starting to learn that he can be a bit handy. And anyway, he doesn't really seem like he's going to get into a fight until these people turn up on his doorstep.
Well, everything's gone like domestic bliss because he's now himself again. And he says, tell you what, I'll cook our favourites, like the lasagna, and we'll have a nice night. And he just, like when he's serving up, he just hears, and then he looks and he sees this convoy of fucking SUVs coming towards the gaff. And he's like, quick, in the basement, get in the basement now. They're like, what? He's
whatever
like,
you
get in the fucking basement. Don't call 911. And he pulls the light switch off the wall and presses some keypad. He's obviously got a panic room somehow set up in his gaff. And then there's just a big fucking, like, enormous fight, very John Wick now.
Yeah,
I thought
he takes two guys down with a baseball bat, and then he slashes one with a kitchen knife, and then there's boiling water involved, isn't there?
Yeah,
a kettle gets thrown at him, and then even the lasagna at one point becomes.
Well, he pummels some guy's head into the lasagna with the kettle.
Yeah, it's more brutal stuff. But eventually, Hutch is actually tasered and dragged out of there. And
it's kind of surprising because it's all going like pretty well.
Yeah,
and it's just like a hand comes in from off screen, and you know he's like, oh shit, he's out. You know, he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone, and he's in the boot of the car with the Russian goons, including an Ethiopian character who's an interesting character. I didn't get his fucking character name. That's really annoying.
No, but he was the hard man of Yulian. He was the man that Yulian been showing off because of his color. He'd already, you know, got a bit of attention anyway, and he'd already said, look, this guy's a hard motherfucker. He'll do as whatever we want, basically. So they're right, okay. And he even makes a joke about one of the Russian oligarchs or guys that are there, doesn't he? I mean, it shows the power of this guy that has now got him locked in the back of a car. They're speeding away. They're going back to Julian. He wants him alive. Doesn't really care if he's dead, I guess, but they're in complete control here. But
or so you think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, then Hutch dislocates his wrist to be able to slip the cuffs off, which is an easy one, isn't it?
Yeah. So he's out the cuffs.
That's like the most, almost like the most pain you see him in. He gets all these beatings and he's like, shakes it off. But that, he's like, ugh. Yeah. And he
gets the fire.
He opens the boot to have a look. And then you see him sort of scrabbling around and he gets the fire extinguisher. Like, well, what's he going to do? And then you just get a shot of like in the passenger bit of the car and the guy's like looking around. And then he obviously like fucking hoofs the bit that folds down in the back seat. And they all look at him and he just sprays the fire extinguisher completely fogging out the cabin and they just crash, you know. And it happens off screen and then you just see the car in slow motion.
Brilliant. Yeah. You just see them head towards a lamppost and then it's just like, there's like a, you know, a fairly serene scene of a, and then this car just comes tumbling into the shot.
Yeah.
And I thought for him as well, that's got hurt still in the back, isn't it? But no. And then he gets out and he kind of just sees out the last few minutes of, it's quite a good scene.
Yeah.
Because the black Russian guy is dying, crushed under the weight of the car. And so he kind of comforts him and just doesn't want him to die alone. And to do this, he starts telling his story. And it's kind of a theme they pick up a couple other times where, as he starts telling the story, people just die before he can get to the end. And he's like, oh, fuck it. Like, you don't care anyway.
He phones his dad to tell him that things have escalated and Christopher Lloyd just smiles. He's watching loud TV all the time. That's good. And then he goes back to the house and there's, you know, it's not being cleaned up or anything. There's blood and people everywhere.
But he does change himself. He realises he looks a bit rough. So he puts on a new shirt and trousers, opens the panic room door and they just kind of step over. And everything, it's not like in other movies where everything's cleaned up and, you know, it's normal.
No.
It's all, you know, you see people all over the house. He's just got his hands.
You can hear a guy like audibly, raspily, breathily.
Yeah.
Like,
getting his last few breaths as they step over his bloody feet and stab legs and stuff. They get out and he sends the kids to safety.
In one of these like scenes where he's revealing his past, he reveals himself to be an auditor.
Mm.
Like the, you know, like the guy in a crime organization that is basically sent in to just fucking.
Well, is this a confession to his son? Then
he's a government intelligence agency hitman, isn't he?
He's, okay. So,
it's
yeah.
specifically, it's kind of non-specific. He works for three-letter agencies. When laws can't take you down, he's the one who finishes
he'll take
you
out
off.
Whole yeah. government.
But he also tells the story of a guy that was in a similar situation to him.
Yeah, it was Paul Giamatti, wasn't it?
Or was it?
Was it? Well, no, it was one of the guys that he was supposed to kill called Alan, Aaron? He's explaining this to four guys that he's got in his basement on his couch.
Dying, different stages of death, yeah.
And he says that basically he had an epiphany one night when he was supposed to assassinate this guy and he let him off. One guy begged for his life.
It's weird because he says, because I had the, you know, it was a wall for PPK silence, and he goes, wait, no, it was, and because you see the actual gun, you know, he's got it pointing in his head. It's just a weird detail, and it's just quite.
Yeah.
Did you think his room was quite man cave-ish?
Yeah,
had
it was
the records and had all the.
But like you say, he goes on with that story to say that the guy sort of begs for his life, and he was just
he let him go. He just decided to let him go, and then he revisited him a year later. You know, fully expected him to have been a recidivist, but he had reformed, and he was just a family man. He had a 9-to-5. He had a wife. He had a kid, and another one on the way. But anyway, Hutch's like, well, fucking hell,
I want a bit of that, and that's what had kind of prompted his hiatus in being badass. But he was back now and they were after him. Julian, again, after this failure, wasn't pleased, but he decides he better go to his place then, doesn't he?
Yeah, we get a bit of montage.
Well, he burns his whole house down first and steals the car, but he also finds the kitty cat bracelet, which initiated it all, just under the couch.
Yeah.
Nice little touch.
Yeah. But, and then he goes and like he buys the business that he works for.
He's tried before.
With, like, yes.
And the guy's like, no, I built this with like blood, sweat and tears. And if someone's going to make me an offer for it, if I'm going to sell it, it has to be like a really good offer. So he just drops a load of gold bullion on the
truck. That guy's
it's Michael Ironside.
From Thing.
The other stuff.
Top Gun. The Arnie.
Loads
film.
Of other stuff.
Total Recall.
Ironic
that I couldn't recall that.
That's a good little scene, actually. So it gives him opportunity anyway to A-team the place up and start putting little
We get a montage of mouse traps with some sort of fuse on it and putting stuff in jars with gunpowder.
Yeah. Cool. It's not exactly clear what it is because he's like welding shit. And
I mean, it goes on, doesn't it? I mean, you've got the inevitable huge big fight at the end. I mean, don't want to spoil everything
but we've had
about
the
it
voice
all,
on the radio know. Again saying, fuck, man, you're taking on the Russians. I'm not fucking coming out of retirement for you and all this sort of shit.
Yeah.
And then a couple of fellas go to the old folks home.
One of those was the director.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, okay. And you're like, fuck, they're going for, you know, the doc here.
Yeah, that's a good scene.
It's a great scene.
Yeah, because he's obviously prepared. He knows that.
Yeah, but he's watching the telly and you hear a noise.
Yeah.
And the guy, the duty officer or whatever, is like, oh, no, like, what's that? And you've just seen, like, a shotgun, like, get pulled up.
Yeah.
And
the guy goes to shoot him and he jams his little finger
in the hammer to stop it going down. And the guy just opens the door. He's like, will you turn that TV down? And he's like suffocating some guy just like out of sight, and another like corpse just to the left of him where, you know, no one can see
just
him.
Just turning the cowboys and Indians down.
You know, he closes the door
Western.
Like, oh, it's just the telly, you know.
Yeah, he finds the Ob Shack, which they'd referred to earlier, which was like this retirement fund that you have to look after, and it's all the gangsters' money.
Yeah, this is it. This is what it's
like a treasury for.
Yeah, well, yeah, because when we were first introduced to him, we saw him taking, you know, a deposit, you know, and all this money is now gone.
Yeah, and he's got all this artwork. He's an art collector, isn't he? Mm. That all gets burnt.
He does manage to save one painting, doesn't he?
A Van Gogh. Yeah,
there's a massive, massive, Pete will tell you, there's a massive pile of money that ends up being burnt.
Reminded me of the Joker in Dark Knight, you know.
Yeah.
He kind of can't forgive him when he finds that's done, when he finds out the money's been burnt.
He's going to be a fucking targeted man for losing all their money.
Yeah.
He's got nothing to lose now.
Well, but he's even more dumbfounded, Julian, because he's doing a gig. And as everybody's clapping him off, there's Hutch sitting there having a meal, having dinner,
right in the middle. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a ballsy move, isn't it?
But yeah, he goes up to him.
He's kind of flabbergasted.
You're enjoying the meal? He's like, not really.
Yeah.
I came for the show.
Everyone pulls a gun on him. There's about like 20 guns.
He's obviously strapped to a bomb.
It's a claymore, wasn't it?
If he's touch, then it is going to go off. So he manages to walk out of there safe, and having tried to negotiate, having tried to make a deal, but there's no go for Julian. Julian's after it. So we have this inevitable back at the yard that he's just bought, where all these traps are set up.
Well, there's a nice fight. Moment where he gives Julian the opportunity to back out.
Yeah, try and negotiate. He says the money.
He goes back into his car. He's sitting there with his fingers crossed.
Really, really wants it to happen.
Did you think that I watched it, because I watched that scene twice, and it was a little bit more ambiguous the second time as to what he was really wishing for. I don't know.
That he could be wishing that the guy takes the offer to just leave it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, a little more ambiguous.
Yeah.
But anyway, he doesn't. And they steam back to his house to Pat Benatar, Heartbreaker. Yeah. And it's a fucking just gore fest, really.
Yeah. I mean, so his old man and Harry show up.
Yeah, the triple kill was just something incredible. I mean, there's loads the gun. Great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And did you watch the credits? In the credits, there's a couple of those scenes where they just have extra scenes, you know, they play it through, and that was one of them when they're just talking. He didn't do it. You should have seen it. He was like,
You can't spoil it. We've spoiled a lot of stuff. People flying everywhere, and it's brilliant.
Yeah.
We get to see all his booby traps and everything that he's made, and it's fucking cool.
Yeah.
And you know, it's lots for me to enjoy in this film. I really thought this was excellent. Really enjoyed it. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but it just caught me at the right time, in the right mood, and I really like this.
What I like about the film and Bob Odenkirk's performance in particular is that he is a really, especially because he's so familiar to me as Saul, like from that world.
Yeah.
And in that, he's like, he's similar. He's involved in kind of like, you know, crime and really kind of fucking hairy situations and everything, but a totally different character in those scenarios. But he was believable as a fucking badass. Like, I don't know. I think it's a combination of, like, you know, the writing and how it was all put together, but also his performance as well.
Well, he trained with Daniel Bernhardt, is his personal trainer. So the key stunt guy. And he trained for a couple of years with him.
So these things don't happen by accident, obviously, but he was, you know, there's lots of these types of, I've not seen many of them, but you know, where you take someone and turn them into like a fucking badass.
I know, who's next? Graham Norton or like, I don't know. Yeah. Just
John Cleese.
Yeah.
Went for a stream of them. You know, I mean, Keanu's done it. He's done the John Wick.
Have you seen the John Wick movies?
I've seen one.
Have you seen a few?
I've never seen any of them because...
Oh, mate, they're like this.
Right, yeah. But because someone just told me the main thing about it is that it's basically like four films of him getting revenge for someone killing his dog. And I don't like dogs, so
you should definitely watch them.
I think I've seen two of them.
The only thing about
Taken's the other one, you know, this age kind of guy. And, you know, there's loads of rubbish ones, though. I mean, you think of all the people who have said that have done really bad ones of these. Travolta's had a go at doing them, and Guy Pearce has had a go at doing these kind of movies, and they've never really been much good.
Mm. Yeah, I do really like this, but violence as a redemption story is a bit of a strange theme, really. And the director does talk about it being like he's addicted to this violence, and that's why he does it, and that's why he restarts it all at the end. But I don't know, you know, because it's like the first bit is all about this masculinity in crisis, and then he resolves all that by being violent. That's, you know.
Well, the wife is like all in at the end. They go to see a gaff, a house, for people who don't know what that means. And they're sort of looking around, and you think that he's been able to, like, you know, brush this under the carpet again, and they're starting afresh, and they're looking around the gaff, and the estate agent says, well, have you got any questions? Said, or has it got a basement? Yeah. Like, she's now totally fine with there being a panic room and him like murdering just, like countless
basically
people.
Basically just setting up a sequel. The way I see
which
it.
Which I would
it
watch.
Did. Yeah. 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 I think that's the way this is going to go.
Yeah. Although the reveal is obviously out there. So you wonder if he's.
Yeah. The surprise.
How they're going to, you know, put
top
a,
it.
Not a gimmick, but you know what I mean? Like,
well, but with, you know, because John Wick now is up to 4 and 5 coming out, and I'm so psyched for all of them. They're brilliant. Right. I love them all.
And yeah, I mean, there's an appetite for this in Hollywood. And I think Bob Odenkirk here is really giving himself a good shout and maybe getting one of these little franchises and things. And there could be 2, 3, 4 of these films, because there's other themes within the stories of how did he get there and the different family that you didn't really get to meet and different jobs and things. They've just moved somewhere. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Pops' backstory would be the obvious thing.
It was inspired by Home Invasion.
Really?
Of Bob Odenkirk. And then his feelings of like being old and like fucking useless and how no situation. So that's where the drive for the story came from.
Because it is crazy, as you pointed out, you know, if somebody robs your house or something, you're like upstairs, you're quiet and say, look, just wait till they go, let's call the police. You're not going to go start trying to wave anything at them or hit them, because what's worth, you know, your life or being injured, not your TV and shit, is it? So
I really like Derek Kolstad's stuff. He was the guy who did John Wick, and he just takes these really simple concepts and then builds these big worlds out of them. And he's got like, nobody is like a real, does the same thing. Maybe the world is a bit smaller, but it's still like something that you can enjoy straight away with that violence in it as well. And he's got a load of video game inspired movies coming out with Hitman and Just Cause and Streets of Rage. Do you remember playing?
Yeah.
So he's got a Streets of Rage movie that he's written, and the director is a Russian guy, Ilya Naishula. He did the amazing music video for the terrible band he fronts called Biting Elbows, and the video was like that first person thing, and they made it into a movie, Hardcore Henry, which
Hungry Henry.
Which was good. And then cool. Christopher Lloyd is in the next season of The Mandalorian and has like loads of stuff on his slate. So he's really busy. So that's interesting, cool. Isn't it?
Good. I like to see him.
So we're saying a strong recommend, I think, from the Bad Dads for this one.
Definitely.
Yeah, go and check this one out. Simon. Jonathan. Peter Daniel.
Mr. Ben, or Monsieur Ben, as they call it in France.
Any relation to Nigel Ben, the boxer?
It's his dad.
Oh, interesting.
If anybody's unfamiliar with Mr. Ben, he's a 1970s animation from the mind of a guy called David McKee. Is that right? McKee. And he kind of looks like a British gent. Office clerk gent. He's got a black bowler hat with a black suit, a black tie, white shirt, and he's got a nice, pleasant face, and he lives at 452 or something like that, Festive Road.
52 it is.
And it's the animation is kind of this old.
Can we even call it animation?
Mm. It's a lot of it is sequences of still paintings.
It's just kind of drawings.
It's very primitive looking in terms of the way
I think it moves. It's almost like, the way it moves and things,
it's nicely drawn. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's artistically there's some merit to it, but in terms of the actual animation, it's like get a picture and drag the one behind it along, you know, that's the way it seemed to work to me.
There was 13 episodes made, and I asked us to watch The Hunter.
Craven The Hunter.
I think it was one of the later ones. It was in the second series.
No, it was the second episode.
But in the real chronological Mr. Ben world, it was a later one. I think they had 6 and then they had another 6 in the second series. But in where we watched it, you watch it on Prime, I think they just show it all in 1 to 30.
At the same time, all the episodes at the same time.
Yeah. It's modern. Streams.
Did you notice that Mr. Ben's eyes are simple vertical lines, but everyone else's have normal eyes?
Is there a significance to that?
I didn't notice that. But Mr. Ben, he goes on adventures.
And he can teleport.
Yeah, he goes to a fancy dress shop, a costume shop, and as if by magic, the shopkeeper would appear and he would ask to choose on one of the...
Is he wearing a fez?
And the shopkeeper's wearing a fez. Sometimes wears a fez. He's got a little kind of moustache and he just kind of appears and he offers him one of the suits. This time he's chosen the khaki kind of hunter's suit.
British colonial. A West Ham fan, you'd appreciate this.
And he goes into the wardrobe and he goes through the second door, which opens the door to adventures. And in there, he meets somebody else. But each story of Mr. Ben, and I watched this one. Have you seen Mr. Ben before?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just, there's a little kind of theme for it all. It's Mr. Ben. He tries to change the world and make it a little bit better. He tries to show a little bit of kindness somewhere, or just turn things around so he shows a different way of seeing things. And he does that in all the different episodes. In this one, you've got the hunter who really just wants to shoot everything.
I didn't remember that about it. And so being made in 1971 and this being about hunting, I did really wonder, like, because you...
I thought they were going to kill that bird.
Yeah.
Just assume they glorify it because it's like a, you know, a good British thing to do. It's like, get a blunderbuss and kill some things.
Yeah.
But Mr. Ben is not that way inclined, is he?
No, so right. The guy says, I'm the best hunter in the world. And he points his rifle up at a bird in the tree. And he's like, oh, well, if you're... Mr. Ben says, if you're the best hunter in the world, you don't need to kill a little bird. You know, I'm sure there's something else that, you know, you might be able to kill. So they go on to the next thing.
Oh, yes. Of course, you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
he's like this sort of old school sergeant major type.
That's right. And he levels his gun at a snake, and Mr. Ben makes a similar comment. And the same goes for a whole host of other animals. I think a lion's in there. And eventually, you know, they're going to get to the elephants because he keeps saying, oh, that's too small. Oh, that's too small. You know, a great hunter wouldn't have that. So Mr. Ben's got a plan anyway, and he goes and has a word with this herd of elephants after he's had a little walk, because they've just had a walk and the hunter's taken a nap.
Well, because they've had lunch and they need a little sit down after lunch.
And so he speaks to the elephants and gets them to hatch a plan, so when the hunter comes to find them and shoot them, they won't get shot. And that's what happens, because they all jump up and down and the hunter can't keep his aim. And Ben gives him a bit of a dressing down here at this stage. And he says, you know, you shouldn't be having a gun anyway. You're really not a very good shooter. You shouldn't have a gun. You know, better you take a camera. And at least you'll get, if you shoot something there, even if you miss, you'll get something. And I just thought,
sage advice. Yeah.
You know, this is 1970s.
I know, were you know, they all TV as profound and, as this
and
one?
It's, lots of them were, you know. I mean, the one before this, I watched The Red Knight. So in this one, it's kind of, you know, environmentalism and activism and everything. He's saying, get a camera, shoot that, you know, go before he goes back into the
Red Knight was the first ever one, and this hunter is the second ever one.
Okay, I'll disagree, but the Red Hunter one...
Where it says original broadcast order 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I think maybe then I'm in the years they were
written.
You're high.
Yeah.
In they were written. But yeah, had otherwise, the Red Knight sent out this message of, you thought he was going to slay the dragon. You thought, oh, that's what he's going to go. He's a Red Knight. He's got a dragon to kill. But no, the dragon was his friend. And in fact, it was the capitalist matchmaker who was overcharging people for matches.
Killed him. Murdered him. That dead.
Pretended the dragon had set all these fires up when it really hadn't.
Red Knight one, I can remember as a kid having seen some episodes. And this has got that like Fawlty Towers effect where you think that there must have been 50 episodes because it was so memorable, and there was only 13. I think there was only 12 Fawlty Towers. But in the bit where he goes to the shop, it's the Red Knight outfit that's in the window of the shop, and all the other ones are inside. And I used to like just long for the episode where he was going, oh, when's he going to wear that one? Because that looks really fucking cool. And then he'd go inside and wear something. He'd become a clown or whatever, and I'd be really disappointed. But I'm not sure if I ever...
Well, speaking of disappointment, I was very disappointed with this, watching it back now.
Were you?
Yeah.
Aww.
I thought it was bollocks, yeah.
Aww. What about the message, though?
Fuck
brilliant.
The message. Yeah. I actually forgot it was on the television at one point. It was so fucking mundane and dreary. I was just like, oh shit, yeah, I'm supposed to be watching this, and it just passed me by. It was just too primitive for me. I don't care about messages. I want violence and lasers and stuff. Yeah, it was just fucking crap.
I watched this with my daughter, and she loved it as well. We wanted to watch the next one, you know?
That's a good endorsement.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, however many years on. It's about 500, isn't it?
Yeah, it must be about that.
Basically, your daughter's got a soul inside it, doesn't it?
Soulless.
Give me robots turning into cars and
stuff. I thought, this was so lovely, and the message was great. I really like animation as far as
I felt like I could have drawn some of them, and I can't draw for shit. I would have set fire to that fancy dress shop.
Each time,
if the message hadn't been as good, I would have probably torn into it.
Yeah. One thing I think is probably worth addressing is it's a weird pastime of his that he basically leaves his house and walks past it. He always talks about like the other shops that are there, and he doesn't go into any of those shops.
No.
But what he does do on a daily basis, or certainly frequently, is goes to a dress-up shop and dresses
potentially a Jimmy Savile.
I wasn't going all the way Savile, but there's definitely some kind of like it's a weird like pastime to just go and dress up.
Yeah,
you know the music.
He's unmarried. He doesn't seem to have anybody else in his life.
I'm unmarried, Riggs.
But I also went on to clarify he doesn't seem to have anybody else in his life intimately.
Neither do I.
You have family. He doesn't seem to have a family. No. He dresses up every day in a bowler hat and he goes out into the park to eat his lunch and feed the birds and stuff. And, you know,
he's a loser, is what you're getting at.
I don't know. A bit lonely.
Yeah,
that's what I would say.
But if I was lonely, I wouldn't go and dress up.
I think he kind of, you know, looks to try and make the world a better place. Each time he comes back, he's given a little memento. It's never money or anything like that. It's just like a little photo of, in this case, so, you know, so you the just elephants. have the memories. Oh, when I look at it, I'll remember the adventure I had. And it was just...
No one ever does that. No one ever, ever does that, ever.
We all do.
No,
they don't. This is massive.
No one gets something out of the drawer and goes, oh, I remember this when I fucking wanked off some homeless guy. No, you don't. No one does it. It's bullshit.
No.
Lasers. Give me lasers.
I don't want lasers. What we had here was xylophone and woodwind instruments with the sound.
Should we talk about music? Because
yes,
his address, we mentioned earlier, was Festive 52 Festive Road. And the real address of David McKee was Festing Road.
54.
Yeah. So it was based on the same street name. And another resident of Festing Road was Duncan Lamont. Remember him? He contributed the score to this program.
Right, okay.
He also contributed some music to
this program.
to this show that we watched. He also contributed some music to The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Right, with Bowie.
I thought that could prompt you to do a David Bowie impersonation.
Well, Mr. Ben's mine now, Sidey.
I like it now.
And,
I'm sold.
I think this guy did King Rolo as well.
Yeah.
Which was pretty good.
Did The Adventures of Spot and Maisie.
Elmer the Elephant.
John Hanna and Ben Kingsley was once said to be in the live action remake of this. Mm. They've got the rights bought off whoever was selling them.
Yeah.
And
I don't think there was no Me Tooing in any of it.
That's a shame.
I was going to make up that this McKee guy was like a sex pest.
No, I think we've got clean content this week.
What do you think about the theme tune side? I like it. If we said we'll put it in, will you actually remember to do it this time?
I'll try.
Okay. Here it is.
Save yourself some editing. So it wasn't a winner all around.
So 75% win is still a good ratio.
Well, you know, it's not what I'm used to.
I don't think I'd
sit and like relive all of these. I remember it fondly from my youth. One thing that, so years ago when I had a job, I still have one now, but a different job, it was like the first time where you'd get like user profiles where you could put, say, like pictures of yourself, right?
Avatar.
And an avatar, or an actual picture of yourself. And this was like before kind of like smartphones and shit. So you weren't able to just immediately like take a phone and upload it. So I didn't have a picture of myself. So I, for some reason, uploaded a picture of Mr. Ben. And still to this day, if I log into Google Chrome, it is Mr. Ben as my like
Frisky Cisco.
Frisky Cisco 69. Yeah, still got Mr. Ben as my like Google Chrome avatar.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're forever bonded that way.
Indeed.
Well, I still think this is a solid choice. I would certainly put it on for the kids. I would recommend that you do the same. I think it's tip-top show still. Really do.
Nice.
Aside, final word, because...
No, I think we should end on a positive. I think it's better to end on a positive. I'm glad that you guys enjoyed it. It just wasn't for
me. I don't like to end on a bad note. Here's a song.
Yeah. No, it just, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Let's just leave it at that.
But
it is fucking complete shit.
What?
Strong choices and a slightly different take on the top five this week, which was fun, actually. I enjoyed that. Yeah. But we've got Howie next week, and he has nominated. So the midweeker is going to be Ghost Rider. Never seen it. So that sounds like I've never seen any films. And then our top five is Scenes with Boiling Water.
Have you seen any films with boiling water in?
Yes, because there was one in Nobody.
Yeah.
And the main film is Hold the Dark. And the kids' film, we're watching a kids' film, not just, well, you don't have to watch it, Pete, is Surf's Up.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Is it?
Yeah, George Miller.
Oh, yeah. Ezra's dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. I want to now revel in the football results. So all that remains is to say, Sidey signing out.
Yeah, Reeg's out.
Dan's gone. Bye, Simon.